The opinions expressed on the following program do not necessarily reflect the views of KTXT, its management, Texas Tech University, or any living person. You're listening to Anthony Pipes Hall and Kelly Dr. K. Caulfield, and this is the Devil's Advocate.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long time.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Devil's Advocate for a Wednesday edition of your favorite political talk here with Tony and Dr. K in the College of Media and Communication.
I'm just doing my AJ Clementi over here.
So. I was wondering. See, we need a buzzer, like the bell. That's our lie bell.
We could have.
It's not our cuss bell.
It's just convenient.
It is. It's really convenient.
There's probably an app for that. I mean, I use the gunplay app, the coin flip app. I bet I could find one of those. Maybe there's an AJ Clemente app.
So you could
just go Tourette's in the middle of your gym.
Yeah,
you know.
So, I love it.
Yeah.
Maybe like a text message sound.
I'll bet that exists now. That'd be bad.
Probably, it's just called the Clemente app.
Text ink. If you know what we're talking about, go look it up. We can't say it on the radio, but it's hysterical.
Yeah. Poor guy. I mean, not so
no,
much poor, but
kidding?
I mean, lost his job.
This is the best career move he ever made. He's going to end up in some major market somewhere. It's just absolutely ridiculous and a little appalling since I'm trying to get students like you hired in television newsrooms and other newsrooms.
And this guy's going to go steal all the jobs.
Yeah, this guy's going to go steal some major market position just because.
And he's from like North Dakota, right?
Well, hey, that job's open if you want to go to North Dakota anchor. So, yeah, think about that.
So if I want to go live in an oil.
So if Anthony leaves this hour, you'll know where he is. Exactly.
Yeah. I can go. Yeah, the water will taste the same. So.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean,
it's not full of oil. You're not dissing Lubbock, are you?
Well, I mean.
Our city, Lubbock. Yeah, I was going to say.
Oh, you missed it.
Yeah, okay.
Okay,
we're trying
anyway,
to get Jason
we'll try
to wake
again
up.
Later.
We'll have a little fun with you here. So okay, that's
okay. So on this show today, Dr. K, what are we going to be talking about on our show today?
Jason said he had an idea. What was your idea for a show topic?
Damned sequester.
Thank you to Station General Manager Derek Ginter for giving us a topic of the week. You're going to hear that again, by the way, because he just does it so well. It's
yeah,
hysterical.
Because, I mean, that is our subject for the, oh yeah, she doesn't know the rated Dorka, does she? So anyway, so sorry.
That was subtle.
We had someone walk by the radio station.
There's a big window here at the radio station. By the way, if you've never been here at the radio station, you should come
always
in.
Come say hi.
Yeah, you should come
say
hi.
Because we love visitors.
Come wave at us in the window.
And, well, anyway, so,
yeah, so
our
anyway,
show today.
We're going to talk about the sequester. And you may realize that we've talked about the sequester often, but it was back in the news this week for a big reason. And we'll revisit
really close to home.
Some of the numbers we revisited before. The sequester, you know, $1.5 trillion over 10 years, and it's actually $83 billion this year, had some impact on something involving what we all often do, especially folks who live in West Texas.
Especially folks who need to go back to Austin every weekend.
Well, or Dallas or Houston or San Antonio. We have many, many students here, even from New Mexico. And so often you'll drive, and usually 100 miles an hour, but sometimes you'll get on an airplane and take a flight.
Not that we advocate going over the speed limit.
No, of course not.
Just saying.
But if you fly, you were at great risk for being impacted by the sequester, and that's the topic we're going to talk about this week. There are two sides to this story, as always, and so we'll flip a coin. Let's start off listening to the montage discussing this issue and the tensions between the two parties.
Flight 209er, you are cleared for takeoff.
Roger.
Huh? LA departure frequency 123.9er.
Roger.
Huh?
Request vector. Over.
What?
Flight 209er clear for vector 324.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, roger. What's our vector, Victor?
Now I radio clearance, over.
That's Clarence, over.
Over. Roger.
Huh?
Roger, over.
What?
Hey! Who?
Our top priority as a nation must be growing the economy, creating good jobs, and rebuilding opportunity for the middle class. But 2 months ago, Congress allowed a series of automatic budget cuts to fall across the federal government that would do the opposite. In Washington speak, these cuts were called the sequester.
The nutrition of our seniors, 4 million Meals on Wheels cut out of it. Workers' unemployment benefits are reduced and cut back.
Because of these reckless cuts, there are parents whose kids just got kicked out of Head Start programs who right now are scrambling for a solution. There are seniors who depend on programs like Meals on Wheels to live independently who are looking for help. There are military communities, families that have obviously already sacrificed enough, who are coping under new strains, all because of these cuts. This week, the sequester hurt travelers who were stuck for hours in airports and on planes and are rightly frustrated by it. And maybe because they fly home each weekend, the members of Congress who insisted on these cuts finally realized that they actually apply to them too.
Democrats apparently in revolt about this. They want to make sure those cuts are spread around. I believe you're saying get on with it. We don't have to suffer like this.
Fact is the 2013 budget request by the Obama administration is essentially the same level of which this post-sequester FAA budget is. So it's all a game.
Republicans claimed victory when the sequester first took effect. And now they've decided that it was a bad idea all along. Well, first they should look at their own budget. If the cuts they proposed were applied across the board, the FAA would suffer cuts three times deeper.
It's not true, it's not real, it's cynical, and it's shameful what the FAA and the Department of Transportation and this administration's doing. The real impacts on people's lives when it doesn't need to. The president's 2013 budget had less money in it for the FAA than the FAA will have after sequestering. So why is it that all of a sudden we're seeing these changes when they've already had planned to be at a smaller amount than what the sequester level is for the FAA?
There's only one way to truly fix the sequester, by replacing it before it causes further damage. A couple of weeks ago, I put forward a budget that replaces the next several years of these dumb cuts with smarter cuts, reforms our tax code to close wasteful special interest loopholes, and invest in things like education, research, and manufacturing that will create new jobs right now. The American people worked too hard for too long rebuilding from one economic crisis just to see your elected officials keep causing more. Our economy is growing, and our deficits are shrinking. We're creating jobs on a consistent basis, but we need to do more to help middle-class families get ahead and give more folks a chance to earn their way into the middle class. We can do that if we work together. That's what you expect, and that's what I'm going to keep on working on every single day to help deliver.
Already then, clearly, a moral issue on behalf of the president.
So yeah, a moral issue about flight delays.
We keep creating false dilemmas and exacerbating problems.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, if air travel is stopped or delayed in important parts of the country, I mean, how are people going to get home? How are people going to conduct business?
Oh, yeah, you don't fly. What do you care?
No, that's right.
By the way,
I can't even drive. Thanks, Dr. K.
Sorry, I don't fly my own airplane.
I can't drive to Austin, so I have to fly to Austin.
Okay,
so
fair enough. Good point.
If I want to see my best friends who went to the Evil Empire.
Dun, dun, I mean, dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, okay, exactly. So,
that's my ringtone, by the way. Some people are catching on as to why, but anyway, it's kind of fun. Interesting dilemma. You know, this did cause some flight delays. We're going to talk at length about why it caused some flight delays, not necessarily just because $253 million was cut from air traffic control.
Which sounds like a lot of money to me.
Quarter of a
Maybe
billion
not
dollars.
To you.
Quarter of a billion dollars. Got it in the back of my wallet right here.
Yeah, of course, 1% with this academic background.
Listen, it's a lot of money. And one of the issues we're going to talk about, this slayed me. How long did it take me to find out where that money came from?
About
like 2 days?
Minutes.
No, that was just today. I've actually been looking for it for a couple days.
Oh, wow.
They came up with a solution to this problem. And again, we'll detail the problem.
And I'm wondering how much trouble is going to come from this decision.
Well, I mean, that was my question. So what happened is let's back up and I'll fill you folks in.
Why don't we just talk about that when we get to the issue?
Well, okay, we can use that. That's
I like
fine.
That.
Okay. So you know what I think?
What?
I feel the need.
The need for speed.
We'll be back in a couple minutes on The Devil's Advocate here on 88.1 The Raider.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to The Devil's Advocate here on KTXT, the Raider 88.1, everyone's favorite Top Gun station. We have a promo written and voiced by our man at the control board, Jason Kilhoffer, my Maverick. That's exactly what it sounds like.
Very nice. Talk to me.
I don't remember the line.
You don't remember the line? It was, this is Maverick. And then Colin took over.
Oh, no, that's bad.
It was awesome, though.
Okay, that's fine. So,
yeah, he didn't quite fill out Iceman, but he tried.
Rest of the show, yeah. I'm going to turn and just randomly mumble, talk to me, Goose, you know, and we'll see what happens. So we may not have set that up enough for you to have understood the reference of our first song in the first break. Because
you don't need a reference for that song.
Well, no, we left Lemuel Chung, our other producer. We lost Lem, so he was like, well, what's up with that song? So anyway, Kenny Loggins is the devil. That's the reference. That's why it fits with the show.
Yeah, basically.
No, I'm kidding. The show is about air travel, and I think we mentioned it. So
we talked about it. Don't worry.
The producers never pay attention to
everyone.
Our show. They
got
know
the
us
joke.
Too well, and so they skip it. So that's why.
Yeah, they just kind of tune us out until we say, "Hey, break." And then they snap back to action. So
we're back here playing cards and stuff. That's how we know.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He's just counting down the minutes.
I can't say as I blame you, because when I go back and listen to the shows later, I'm like, oh my God, and I get some cards out. So, you know, I get
really?
It.
Really? I listen to it and I go, man.
I usually think it's better on the air than when we were doing it, which is pretty funny, because you guys can't see how lost we get in here, which is why it's radio and not television. But yeah. We don't want to reveal too many secrets.
Maybe next semester you guys will be on TV. Take my legacy onto another platform. Just saying.
Okay.
So we're going to be talking about air traffic delays.
So here's what happened. The sequester is in place. It's these cuts, you know, and we've talked about them before. So approximately $80 billion in cuts this year of a total of $1.6 trillion over 10 years. And part of the cuts this year, about $800 million, were to the FAA and to, you know, to transportation and security. And the FAA was actually, well, there's some complexity here. Anyway, there were some cuts in air traffic controllers. And when you don't have air traffic controllers, it puts a damper on flight. Exactly. So there were some flight delays, especially at some big airports in Chicago, in New York, in LA, some major airports in Atlanta.
So it wasn't just podunk airports.
No.
We're talking big ones.
And here
like
in Texas,
Chicago.
Dallas, Houston. I don't know if in our city, out here in Lubbock, if in our city we had any delays. I'm not sure.
Sounds like we may need to look into that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure what happened in our city here, but...
So
gonna have to throw something at Jason.
So,
however,
yes, I love it.
I'll be less subtle next time, but there you go. Now you know what's coming, and a reason to keep listening. Anthony, you know where there were not flight delays?
Let me think. If I was a lawmaker, where would I not want delays to happen?
Well, lawmakers are from all around the country, so that's a little complicated.
No, but they go.
Do they all fly into one place?
Yeah, actually, they fly to Washington, D.C. There were no flight delays, and you said the three major D.C. airports,
exactly. Reagan,
BWI.
Washington National, Baltimore, Washington International, exactly, and Dulles International Airport, the largest one there.
So, gee whiz, that's really convenient, you guys. Thanks for sticking the rest of us out
full
in the snow.
Full staffing of FAA controllers at all three of those airports.
24/7, probably.
Right through the delay. Exactly right. So, yeah, no delays there, which is pretty interesting. And by the way, this is a topic for another show, but a lawmaker tried to push through an ordinance that would not hold U.S. lawmakers to Obamacare. He was going to not require for federal lawmakers in the House
awesome.
And Senate.
Awesome. Know, oh, I heard another thing on
appalling.
The news about that, too. So we're going to be talking. This is a tease for next week. Make sure you tune in so you can hear us talk about how lawmakers are getting around their own laws, like Obamacare and the new stock law. Did you hear about this?
Oh, yeah. There were restrictions on their investments. Exactly.
Yeah. So basically... Oh, we'll talk about it next week.
Okay, good show, good tease. Your money's involved. By the way, your money. They're all
your money.
Your money.
Also,
so you
your economy, basically.
Exactly. So that'll be interesting.
So back onto air traffic.
Okay.
So to resolve these kinds of things, to fix this kind of problem, what Congress did was they just kind of slid $250 million over from somewhere else.
Yeah.
Now, where do they get this money from?
Which is funny because this just occurred to me. It's $253 million, and I was going to ignore it, but I'm thinking, no, in your world and mine, $3 million is a lot of money.
A lot of money.
So every penny counts.
So $253
million. Yeah, and, you know, and I'm thinking that's a pretty big hole. We need $250 million to continue to pay flight controllers. So
where are we going to get this money from? Was it from Social Security?
Could be medical research.
Was it defense?
We may have sunk some aircraft carriers. Entirely
was
possible.
Maybe
the Air Force, because, you know, you land some planes to fly some others.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
No, it was
Medicare,
neither of these.
Medicare, Medicaid. No, really? Where was it?
No, it came
Where in the world was there $250 million just lying around handy? You're kidding. Where was
funny
that?
Funny enough, there was $250 million laying around in another part of the FAA budget.
At the FAA, exactly.
They were just like, hey, you know what? We don't think we're going to need this money to improve our airport. So we're just going to pay some traffic controllers instead.
And I was alluding to this earlier. It took me 2 days of arduous searching, and I kept going back to, and not that I'm always an enormous fan of the New York Times, but when you really want to find out obscure information nobody else has, you're going to find it in the 3,000-word New York Times article, where it's not necessarily in the 700-word Avalanche Journal article. Nothing against the Avalanche Journal or every other local paper, but the Times has that kind of space and reports
that
kind
of news.
Exactly right. And so I kept revisiting the New York Times and Washington Post and everywhere else I could think of, because I was dying to know where the $253 million came from.
And he finally found it about 20 minutes ago.
Right before the show started. And it was ridiculous because repeatedly in articles, I would say, oh, they simply shifted the $253 million from elsewhere in the FAA. And I'm like, well, what in the heck are they not paying for it, the FAA, to pay for these air traffic controllers? Not that I'm saying air traffic control isn't probably arguably the most important part of the FAA, but still. You know,
we're talking airport improvements.
National Transportation Safety Board, NTSB, is part of that same umbrella. I mean, I sure hope they didn't take it from them. But no, it was Repair and Improvement Fund for airports.
So this could be, what are they called?
Runway repair.
Talk today.
I hope there aren't holes in your runways.
Yeah, runways. It could be fixing the planes themselves. It could be the connecting bridges. So you might be walking to your plane and suddenly the floor falls out. Thanks, Obama.
Yeah, or improvements. Lubbock's growing steadily as the university keeps climbing toward 40,000 students
and
here.
And tier one status. Thank you.
And so the community's also growing with us. Lubbock's approaching 250,000 people. Not 250,000, 250,000,000. Dollars, but Lubbock's approaching 250,000 population. It's entirely possible our airport, which is a delight to fly through, may well need to be expanded, add some gates, add some more security.
And now we won't be able to. Now we may not be able to do that.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly.
See, he's catching on. We're trying to keep Jason's attention so that he's not playing cards. Maybe he'll participate in the show a little more. He's starting to get into it, which is cool. So here is the debate for today.
Okay.
We're going to flip the coin.
Wrong. Oh, no, wait. Too early. Sorry. My bad. Go ahead.
Let me finish before you get all antsy about it. So here is the topic for today. It's kind of twofold. Should we have taken money?
Two-faced.
Okay. Yeah, basically. Which is funny because we're flipping a coin. Should... See, now he's really getting into it. So should we be taking...
It is an awfully weird week for weather, and we'll talk about that too.
Yeah, that'll come back into play.
I just want to interrupt you.
Okay, appreciate it.
Well, it worked. Thanks. Now I can't remember what I was saying.
And now I'm paying attention instead of playing cards.
We're going to be talking about whether or not the government should have taken money from the FAA's air traffic control with the sequester, and should it have been taken from the FAA's own budget to compensate for it?
Right. And then another big issue is the sequester. These lawmakers agreed on the sequester if they couldn't agree on a negotiated deal back in 2011. We've talked about this on the program before. And the sequester was the backstop in case they could not agree. And guess what? They could not agree back in 2011.
So now we're paying.
Damned sequester.
So the sequester took effect. So the other argument is, do you now start tweaking around the edges of the sequester
to get around
actually cutting spending?
Yeah, exactly. So are you taking away from the problem that you created
ahead and take your medicine, which is the conservative argument, or do you say these are draconian, painful cuts, including safety of air travelers?
And raise more taxes.
And you have to find a way to pay for these things, and so you don't do the sequester. So,
what is our coin for today, Dr. K?
I'm flipping an English pound just because.
Just because.
Because some of the flights that were delayed would surely have gone to London Heathrow or Gatwick. So
what?
I thought,
London
Heathrow?
Heathrow?
Yeah, or Gatwick, another big airport over there.
See, I've never been fortunate enough to go overseas.
Now, and if you were flying out of Washington, of course, there were no flight delays to London Heathrow. So.
Of course.
Anyway, random coin choice. So do you want to call it?
I think I called it last week.
Okay.
So you can call it this week.
Okay. Heads, I will be conservative. Here we go. If we see the Queen's face, which we do. Okay, I'm conservative.
So you're conservative, and I get to be liberal.
You're liberal, exactly.
So.
Get to be liberal?
Yeah, I get to be liberal this week. So, I get to go first.
Why?
Well, because I say so.
Okay.
So here's the thing. We shouldn't have made
these.
Let me
grab a bite on my sandwich because I'm starving.
I'll just let you have that, and I'll conduct the show the way I feel is appropriate. So, the Democrat preaching hour. So, we shouldn't have made these cuts from.
Different from all Democrats always hell. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. So, the thing is, we shouldn't have made these kinds of cuts to the FAA, of all things. This important federal agency that controls something that is covered in our Constitution, the Transport
Certain
Clause.
Agencies are sacrosanct, and they're whichever ones are important to me. Okay, fine.
Yeah, to me. The Interstate Commerce Clause is covered heavily by the FAA. They regulate interstate commerce. These flights aren't just passenger flights. The FAA's air traffic controllers control freight flights. You could be missing UPS packages.
Interesting argument.
Freight.
And I will say, I'd feel a little less comfortable if Ohio had different safety and flight regulations than, say, Illinois. You know, so, at what altitude you should be if you're going west as opposed to east.
Oh, right, because the FAA regulates
this across
all
states. Probably a really good
idea
to have some standardization. Yeah, I get your point. I'll concede that one.
So when you take away from air traffic, you're making the flying either dangerous or something you don't do at all.
Dangerous.
I don't like you because you're dangerous.
Yeah, okay.
Another Top Gun reference.
Exactly.
Thank you, Iceman.
Nicely done.
So, thank you. So, in addition to that, what's really janky about it on both sides...
Hey, what's your language?
Sorry. You should have beeped me. What's really messed up about this...
Isn't that a movie? Janky? Just came out?
Janky?
Okay, sorry.
Oh, Janky. The D is silent. So...
Okay, so
Anthony, get to the point. Oh my
sorry,
god.
Sorry.
I'll try.
Sorry. Okay. Are you gonna
Yeah, I'll jump in any time. Look, you agree to cuts, you need to have some cuts, and for God's sakes we have to have some cuts. We've had $1.5 trillion deficits for 4 years, fifth year in a row now. The national debt's up to $16.5 trillion. The only way to ever cut spending from anywhere is to just force it on everybody. And I won't blame Republicans equally as Democrats,
I will. Trust me. I'll blame them.
I'm sure
I'll blame
you
them enough for the both of
us.
Yeah,
and only because of the coin flip. Listen, the Republicans have been very guilty up until 2007, 2008. And I loudly, vociferously, repeatedly argued against Homeland Security. Thank you. When that was being formed by W in the wake of the September 11th attacks, even though I think it has worked out, but it's an enormous unionized federal bureaucracy taking the place of what was a patchwork of federalist, state, and local-run agencies. Now, arguably, a big federal security agency sharing intelligence, et cetera, might be better, but I just don't like centralizing spending on stuff. I think it's always a mistake, and Republicans were knee-deep in pushing for that stuff, and they're just as guilty up to a certain point in spending until 2008, 2010 especially.
Boy, what happened around then?
The Tea Party came into power. People like Paul Ryan, Rand Paul came into office and were urgently interested in cutting the debt and the deficit and have had real success in it. And I love this draconian language. Harry Reid, and I should have cut this clip for the show. Apologies for not doing it. Go YouTube it because he's out there. Harry Reid got on the floor of the Senate this week. He's the Democrat
minority leader,
and he's from Nevada, longtime Democrat from out there.
See, I'm political enough to remember that.
Nicely done.
Thank
and
you.
He comes out and starts talking about we're going to cancel medical research and cancer and people are going to die because of the sequester. And it's just absurd scare tactics. It's just appalling scare tactics. It's just ridiculosity.
Well, except it can't be entirely scare tactics, because if Rand Paul had the power, I'm sure he would cut those kinds of things just to save a buck or two.
Listen, Paul Ryan's budget balances the budget in 10 years, eliminates the deficit, starts reducing the national debt in 10 years. And you know how much money he cuts each and every year from the federal budget?
How much?
Not a penny. He has increases every year in the budget, but because of growth in the economy, population, tax revenue that grows with the economy, because of a restoration of gross domestic product, jobs, commerce, the budget balances with increases in federal spending every year. Paul Ryan's budget still balances all of these, quote, cuts they're talking about. And we've talked about this in here before, too.
We have.
It's all based on a baseline budget, which is there's a presumption that the budget for every single department in the entire federal government will go up a certain amount every year. And if instead of letting it go up 8%, you only let it go up 6%,
you're
then that's a
cutting.
Cut. And it's not a cut. It's a reduction in the increase. Paul Ryan's entire budget has not a single penny cut. Everything goes up.
So
it
the
just
idea
goes
is...
up much slower than Obama's budget. And so he gets to a balanced budget in the most offhanded, balanced, fair way possible. It's a painless way. You wouldn't even notice the difference.
Oh, you'd notice
we
because what you're doing.
We certainly wouldn't slash and burn spending from medical research.
No, but what you're doing is you're still shrinking the investment
the rate
in
of
government.
Growth. Yeah, and which household can expect 8% increase in their income?
Oh, please, don't tell me you're using the household argument again. We've argued about
Hello?
This before in another show.
Who pays the taxes? The American populace. Guess what? They have to pay other bills in addition to their taxes.
Guess what doesn't? Guess who doesn't pay their taxes?
Half the population.
Yeah, the top... What? No.
Yes.
The top spenders
Half
and earners in the United
Half the population of the U.S.
States.
Pay no federal income tax.
This is not our show. This is not our show. Get back on topic.
It's all about the sequester. You're saying the wealthy who pay all of taxes are the ones who don't pay taxes?
You mean who don't pay their taxes?
The wealthiest 2% of Americans pay 10% of income taxes. The wealthiest 10% of Americans pay almost half of all federal income tax.
But
10% of Americans pay. It's about the dollars.
No, it's about the rate.
Where do you think Obama's $2.5 billion come from? All right, let's get back to air travel.
I'm telling you, this is not our show.
Do you want to invoke? Do you want to invoke the president?
Yes, because that may shut you up. So here's
good luck with that.
Yeah, right. So here is the president on flight delays. So we can get back
this
on
week,
topic.
The sequester hurt travelers who are stuck for hours in airports and on planes and are rightly frustrated by it. And maybe because they fly home each weekend, the members of Congress who insisted on these cuts finally realized that they actually apply to them too. Republicans claimed victory when the sequester first took effect, and now they've decided that it was a bad idea all along. Well, first they should look at their own budget. If the cuts they proposed were applied across the board, the FAA would suffer cuts three times deeper. So Congress passed a temporary fix, a Band-Aid. But these cuts are scheduled to keep falling across other parts of the government that provide vital services for the American people. And we can't just keep putting Band-Aids on every cut.
All Americans, really, in terms of travel for work, for family reasons, summer approaches, for recreation, what it means to parks in that regard, we can resolve the sequester issue.
So that was the president and Nancy Pelosi talking about how this actually impacts us. And
talk
how,
about people with some issues to resolve.
Oh, okay. Please. And how we put a temporary Band-Aid fix on something that shouldn't have happened in the first place.
That's right. We should have cut every budget for every department in the entire government, and then we wouldn't have had to worry about.
Speaking
like,
of slash and burn
around.
Cuts, hello, we no. can't do that. You called it draconian yourself.
So that was last week. That's why I'm not
right.
in charge of the government.
Right. Because you'd Rand Paul it.
That's the argument that they make, and it's ridiculous. And I have a great answer to that. I'm going to play that.
Do you?
Couple
Do
of,
you really?
A couple of my heroes were on CNBC this week. Rick Santelli, who's the father of the Tea Party, who came on in February 2009 when the $800 billion stimulus was being passed through the House and the Senate, the Democrat majority House and the Senate, before the Republicans won the House back in 2010.
Rick oh, he Santelli, calls it a slush fund after the presidential bailout in that same year.
Oh, well, look, I opposed W's bailout for the banks, the $500 million bailout. I mean, half
was that before
dollar.
Or after? A
that was before
flip.
The election, and then I opposed that one too. I just don't like spending any money, mine or anyone else's, especially tax dollars. But anyway, a couple of my heroes, Rick Santelli on CNBC, and he had a guest, Tom Coburn. Sorry, Texans. Tom Coburn's actually from Oklahoma, but I think after you hear this, you're going to like him. Let's take a listen.
There's always a little optimism on the trading floors on Friday, and there's a lot of optimism probably by the traveling citizens of the United States, and hopefully this will be the last time I talk about the sequester and its effects on transportation. But the final tombstone, yesterday we had a very busy senator on in the afternoon, Senator Tom Coburn, Republican, Oklahoma.
And so what they've decided to do, matter of fact, we got email from a whistleblower yesterday that management is trying to force all air traffic controllers to take their sequester the same day to essentially shut down air service in this country. So what we have is a contrived situation to make it very painful on the American public rather than live within our means, make the common sense changes. They have 47,000 employees, 15,000 are controllers, and we're going to have a press agent not take less than what a controller does. And the fact is this is having real impacts on people's lives when it doesn't need to.
He told me we're going to run this thing through the Senate tonight. We're going to run it through the House, in his opinion, today, which would have been yesterday, tomorrow, and probably could be on the president's desk by today.
You know, when we're going to be on the air, was it yesterday, today, or tomorrow, or was it yesterday's tomorrow?
Well, I think you said it wrong. It's today, yesterday,
today, yesterday, yeah. So we were on the air today, yesterday, tomorrow.
I can't
remember
what day
it
was.
He got me all torn up. Yeah. I can't believe you use this guy as a reference. I mean, how credible is that?
He's got
Let's be real.
He has a big-time six, maybe seven-figure gig on national television, and we're just sitting
Must
here.
Be nice.
Yeah, we're held to the radio. It doesn't seem right. We usually
yeah,
get the days
we can
right.
get our Get our days
yeah,
straight.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, it is actually.
All right. Tom Coburn had some great points. One of the most important points he made, Coburn says this whole thing is a sham. And for the president to come out in his weekly radio address, which is what you heard earlier, talking about how these draconian cuts are disruptive. And remember, the entire cut of the – remember we talked about this. The entire impact of the sequester – damn sequester. The entire impact is about, what was it, 1.4%, 1.3%?
Yes.
I think we settled on. So it's minimal impact in general. It's even less than that within the FAA. So how does a cut, and again, it's a cut to an increase, not really a cut, but how does a cut have that big an impact in an agency with those thousands of employees, tens of thousands of employees? And Coburn nailed the president on it. They strategically and by memo and discussion openly said, we want as many controllers as possible to take Fridays off so that travelers will really feel the impact and it will put pressure on lawmakers
to come up with a fix. Oh, wow, cool. A conspiracy theory on my show.
No, it's actually true. It was documented. It's not something I got from Alex Jones, I'm telling you. Alex Jones has appeared on our program, too, before, at least in our montages.
Yes. But that is, I can't really call that like a sham or some kind of conspiracy because that's legitimate. I mean, that's putting this whole thing into focus. You're removing an entire day from travel, which is almost exactly what you're doing when you're making the cut to begin with. How can you expect them to mediate this kind of huge slash from a federal agency's budget when you're having to virtually lay people off work?
Damned sequester.
So my beef is with the strategery of it. And that's a word that Saturday Night Live always used when they were talking about W. So strategery. My beef is the president is the one that made it have this big impact on Fridays for a few weeks, just so he could try to force the issue. And what ended up happening is if it had been spread out over 7 days and controllers happen to work 7 days because I've flown every different day of the week, then the impact would have been minimal. Hardly anybody ever would have felt it and it would have been fine. And so it appalls me that he's the one that made this decision. And so blame should lie with the president. And remember, FAA.
Thanks, Obama. Just like everything.
It's executive branch. So he's the one who administers that stuff. But look, he's the one who is responsible for administering it in such a way that it did hurt, that it got in the way of air travel, that it slowed people down, caused delays. That wasn't necessary. And that was artificial. And that's the argument Tom Coburn was making.
I don't think that's artificial at all. I mean, I believe that if the Republicans are going to force this kind of a cut on people, they should know what they're dealing with. I mean, this is upfront saying this is what your representatives are chopping from your lives.
So the Republicans came through and obviously chopped nothing from your lives. By the way, the fix came from Republicans on Capitol Hill, and they were all proud of this. And the reason they're proud of it is because it didn't cost a penny in tax dollars, which, of course, is what the Democrats were angling for. They wanted more tax money to plug this hole to get the planes back in the air. And the Republicans said, look, we need to do this all across the federal government. We need to tighten our belts and just shift money around. We can wait on improvements like adding a new terminal to Preston Lubbock International Airport.
Oh, yeah. They're really going to be saying that when the cotton industry isn't able to fly out all the stuff that they need to get, when their precious small businesses start taking this hit for their freight shipping and their freight flying, then they're really going to get ticked off.
I'm pretty sure you can get a whole lot of cotton on a train. I'm just saying.
Do we really use trains anymore? Have any of you guys seen a train in the past 20 years?
Well, let's leave you with one last thought on this topic about air travel, and it'll make you a little bit nervous, but it'll also make you laugh. We'll play this one little clip, and then I think we'll take a break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes on The Devil's Advocate.
Flight 209er, you are cleared for takeoff.
Roger.
Huh?
LA departure frequency 123.9er.
Roger.
Huh?
Request vector. Over.
What?
Flight 209er clear for vector 324.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, Roger. What's our vector, Victor?
Howard radio clearance, over.
That's Clarence, over.
Over.
Roger.
Huh?
Roger, over.
What?
Hey. Who?
Thing.
So, that was a clip from Airplane that makes me laugh every time. So, we're going to go to a break here in a minute, but Dr. K, I wanted to ask, do we have any, like, what is our final end on this topic?
Well, look, in my opinion, the problem's resolved, at least for the moment, and it resolved in the right way, which is we found some other money. We didn't have to raise taxes. We didn't have to shut down anything, even outside that department. We didn't even leave the FAA to find the money. That's the obvious solution. I think it needs to be replicated repeatedly across the government so that we can continue certain things that are important. I have said for years, the only way to be fair, because there are things you don't want to cut. You don't want to cut air travel because it could hurt small business. I never want to hurt small business. Nobody wants to cut medical research. Oh, but we don't want to cut the military. Remember, the original big compromise with the sequester was it was about half military cuts and about half domestic cuts. And that was why it was supposed to force Democrat and Republicans to get together and compromise. It failed on both counts and in both parties, which is, again, why I lay some of the blame at the feet of the Republicans. But my beef is you're going to have to be able to make cuts. Nobody wants to make cuts to their pet programs. The only way to be fair is to see how much the budget needs to be cut and cut every single department in the entire government by whatever that percentage is. And it doesn't have to be all at once. In fact, Mitt Romney argued against cutting 13% out of every budget all at once. He said, no, look, you can do it a little bit at a time over years, like Paul Ryan wants to do. Cut a percent, cut half a percent, keep doing it year after year. You'll hardly feel it. You'll hardly ever notice. And guess what? The budget will be balanced after 5, 8, 10 years, and no one will have felt a thing. And guess what? Everybody's program contributes to it.
Right. But when you're I can agree that I'm glad that this thing is over. It shouldn't have happened in the first place. But
the president shouldn't have done it in the first place. That's exactly
no. The Republicans shouldn't have forced us into this in the first place by
it.
Being
no,
stop, stop. I didn't say a word while you were talking, okay? And here you are cutting me off like a rude Republican.
I'm just rude.
Yeah, I can tell. So the problem is that with this cut, we're going to start noticing problems with a repair, and it may be called improvement, but you still have to maintain these things, and there's not going to be money for that. So we may, in the future, we may start seeing things like runways breaking down. We may see accidents at airports. We may see problems with planes.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Do you mind? Do you mind, buddy? So... And yes, you were right. The entire sequester could have been fixed by deal making in Congress, and the Paul Ryan budget constantly slashes on baseline budgeting. He calls it cuts, but you're still talking about a shrinking government,
a shrinking increase in government.
It's still shrinking because these kinds of things like welfare and domestic spending increase with the rise of population. And yes, we are experiencing a rise in population. The entire world has covered 6 or 7 billion people.
I only had 5 burritos instead of 6. So instead of 3 notches on my belt, I just have to loosen 2.
Finish talking, we're just going to go to a break and we're going to come back and talk about the new findings in the Census Bureau about voter turnout in 2012. Make sure you come back here on the Devil's Advocate on KTXT The Raider 88.1.
Running with
jumped out on that road. Got no love, no love you call real. Got nobody waiting at home. I'm running with the devil.
Hey everybody, welcome back to The Devil's Advocate on KTXT The Raider 88.1, and I didn't botch it that time.
It's a good day. It's always a good day.
So you said you had something else that you wanted to just throw on.
No, I'm going to share some numbers, nonpartisan, and just button up what we talked about.
We already gave our closing comments on it, so this is just some details.
You know where we stand, which is probably ironically actually where we stand today, which is why we were so impassioned in the arguments. It was pretty funny. This did pass the House last week. The president signed it. It passed overwhelmingly, 361-41, to vote to shift this money, this $253 million from maintenance, not maintenance, from improvements, over to air traffic control.
Except it is maintenance. Well, it is repair.
Remember, it has nothing to do with airplanes. It has to do with airports. And so it's not like your airplane will not be properly maintained the next time you fly. That had nothing to do with this budget. And there's some flight delay numbers, too. So there were 8,800 flight delays in the last week across all airlines across the whole nation. It sounds like a lot, but there are a couple hundred thousand flights, and so it actually wasn't that big an impact. And the previous delay there, a couple of years ago, there were some slowdowns. Actually, a year ago, April. And this just to put it in perspective, regular flight delays from weather issues, planes can't get to gates, missed connections, maintenance issues on, you know, have you ever been on an airplane and they say, oh, we need to replace a light bulb or a switch or something, and you get delayed. There were 2,800 of those delays in a typical week during the sequester slowdown. So 2,800, there were 8,800. So about 6,000 more delays over the period of this slowdown, which again is not ideal, but not terrible. So,
well, it's not terrible until it's your plane.
True. But if you get stuck somewhere good, you know.
Unlike
anywhere in Texas.
I got stuck in Houston once.
Okay, well, so anywhere in Texas but Houston. But yeah, I'm with you there. Okay, got it. Anyway, the good thing is, so my two pieces of advice. A, have $253 million just sitting around in your sofa cushions in case something like this comes
just
up.
Just in case.
And B, tighten your seatbelt, read a book, don't look out the windows when you're on the runways because you just don't want to
you don't
see what's
see
going on at the airport. Exactly. So that's all I'm saying. All right, so we have another topic.
Yes,
Should we vote on what our next topic is?
See, it's funny because our next topic is, like I mentioned, the U.S. Census Bureau and some independent researchers have found out that the statistics for minority versus white voting has changed this in the past election.
And there are some trends going back to the 1960s. What do you think those trends are? Do you know?
I would say, just an educated guess, since I am educated on the topic, that since the 60s, the entire voter turnout has been steadily decreasing from about 2/3 to about 50%. Now, minority voting, in the meantime, has been doing the exact opposite, right? It's been slowly crawling up each year until, the face he's making says no.
Not quite. It's a good guess, given the ultimate conclusion for 2008 and 2012.
So what was found?
The only thing wrong in your statement was gradually.
Oh, gradually. Yeah. So it's been...
So all
rapidly
voters,
increasing.
All voters, sort of, yeah.
Sort of, okay.
Yeah, very recently.
Okay, so
anyway,
tell me.
All voter turnout, both genders, all races, ethnicities, ages, has been declining fairly steadily since 1968. So to put in perspective, about 2/3 of Americans voted in 1968. This last election, it was about 55%.
So I was right.
So it's down.
I'll take it.
So that part's down. That part's down, and it's down. It's down across all demographics. So white voters, Latino voters, black
voters,
male, female, young voters, they've all declined pretty steadily, and at different rates. Now there was an abrupt change, which has never happened before, starting in 2008, and then the Associated Press reported just this week, which is why it's in the news and on the show, that there was a dramatic change for the first time ever. And I think Anthony has details about that one, which is why you were making your guess.
That's right. So in the in both the 2008 and 2012 elections, but mostly in the 2012 elections, for the first time in history, the rate of black voters in the United States has surpassed the rate of white voters in the United States. So by a percent, blacks are now voting more than white people, or at least they did in this election. We'll have to wait for the midterm elections, which will have lower numbers to begin with, and the 2016 elections to see if this is actually a thing or if it was a one-time deal.
A cross-section, a case study of the 2008 and 2012 election.
Right, if it was a coincidence with the first black president.
Now, and it's interesting because there's evidence for both, and so we'll talk a little about it. But, yeah, so one interesting change, again, the participation rate, the voter turnout has gone down among all ethnicities, genders, ages, et cetera, year to year, steadily from 1968 on through, actually even 1964. And it's gone down at different rates. So black voters, for example, were 7% less likely to vote in 92 than in 88. So their vote dropped 7% from that year. But 96, it dropped only 3%. In 2000, when W was running for office, it dropped only 1%.
So baseline decreasing.
So their participation was still dropping, but the drop shrank dramatically every 4 years each election. And so when W was on the ballot in 2000 and in 2004, black voter turnout dropped ever so slightly. It barely went down at all. And it's an indication that black voters were either more enthusiastic about those elections or were in the process of reversing a long trend. So remember, 1992, down 7% from 4 years earlier. 2000, down barely 1% from 4 years earlier. So they were getting close to maintaining the turnout from the previous year. And guess what happened in 2008?
The first black president was elected.
Exactly. And black voter turnout went up 2.6%. First time that's ever happened. It actually went up from 4 years earlier.
So was this the only minority vote to go up like this? Were Hispanics more active in the vote? Or do you not have that? Because I kind of threw that one at him. I'm not going to lie. I kind of just dropped that one on him.
To the smartphone. No, yes. Let me go down and look. I do not have Hispanic data. My guess is Hispanic turnout probably creeped up, but my guess is also not as much. And here's an irony. People forget about this. George W. Bush captured about a third, almost 40% of the Hispanic vote. Mitt Romney got about half that. He got barely 20% of the Hispanic vote. George W. Bush used to win the majority of the Hispanic vote when he was running for governor of Texas. So
the
majority
of
Texas Hispanics liked George Bush, at least when he was in Texas. And I have a friend who's a hardcore liberal, and she lives somewhere else in Texas, not here in West Texas. Take a guess where.
Probably Austin.
Okay, good guess. So anyway, she's a hardcore
liberal. Is this your wife?
No, actually.
Are we talking about Nuri?
It's a good friend of my wife's, but no, okay. We're not talking about Nuri. But it's funny because this friend said, I liked W when he was governor of Texas. I don't know what went wrong with him when he got to Washington. It's pretty funny. So anyway, she turned. So this is interesting. So again, the two points are there was this sort of slow, steady increase in voter turnout in the couple of elections before 2008. And then in 2008, it actually jumped to where there was a literal 2.8% increase in voter turnout among blacks. It could be because of President Obama being the first African-American president to run. It could also be a sign of an increased activism and successful efforts to get out the vote and some other things in the black community.
Right. That's my theory. Instead of just lumping it all and saying, oh, it's just because there was a black president, what I think it is it's sort of a maturing of the idea of being able to vote. I mean, unlike women, African Americans and other minorities like that did not have the luxury of voting until 1964. So ever since then, you of course they're going to be gradually getting into the idea of voting. And now in this day and age, I would think it's been rather commonplace for minorities to feel like they have this power of voting. Here in Texas, especially with the new Battleground Texas movement here in the state,
we've seen signs of that around campus just this weekend.
Absolutely,
if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
So the idea that minorities have this voting power is being stressed here, especially with Hispanics. I think that this is a gradual growth of the idea in the black community coming to a head now, just like it's going to with the Hispanics in the next few years, now that they've got representatives like Ted Cruz and Julian and Joaquin Castro. The idea that there are people that these minorities can relate to instead of just... I hate to say it, just like white people like us in government will give them this empowerment and idea that they can affect their government.
I shouldn't repeat what I said last week when we were talking about the caucuses,
the caucuses. Yeah.
Okay.
Never trust someone from the caucuses.
Yeah, okay. Something like that. We'll leave that out. Couple other trends in the voting trends. And actually, you raise a valid point. So something about, and it's funny.
Don't sound so surprised about
it. Well, I lived in Miami for 14 years. So it's difficult. And my wife is a Latina. So it's hard for me to even say the word Hispanics, like the Hispanic community, because I firsthand witnessed tremendous differences between Colombians, Cubans, immigrants from Mexico who came here to work in fields, from Central Mexico.
We're talking about a census demographic.
But let's talk about it as a census demographic, Hispanics in the U.S., and they surpassed African Americans some decade ago as the largest minority, quote, minority, and are actually expected to possibly surpass white voters as early as 2040. So they may go from minority to majority status, certainly something to keep in mind and a demographic to keep an eye on. And so very important. And Republicans are desperately trying to reach both of these. Do you remember the support by party among African-Americans in the turnout in 2012?
No, off the top of my head, I would wager a majority of Democratic support for the president and for his Democrats in Congress.
A fair guess. You want to take a stab at a number?
Two-thirds.
Be outlandish.
Be outlandish. Okay, 95%.
Really, really close. 93% of black Americans voted for President Obama. And it's actually typical for Democrats to earn 90-plus percent among Democrats, among African Americans. But this will be interesting to see. And the only way to know is in the next election, whether there's an African American on the ballot or not will be a factor. But if there's not, then we might get an indication of whether this is a trend or if it's just a hallmark of this particular president running. Let's take one last break. We'll come back and have a little fun with something at the end of the program. We'll
talk our favorite segment.
Exactly.
Evil on her mind. Oh,
okay,
sorry.
I said on the topic of the show, it'd be evil to do this, but we're going to do it. You know what we don't have time for this week?
We don't have time for the lightning round. Oh, at least he had it ready. So instead, we're going to do something equally fun, and we're going to bring our guests from Saturday Night Live into the segment.
Actually, this is the president himself at the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
All right. My bad.
I get it. These days, I look in the mirror, and I have to admit, I'm not the strapping young Muslim socialist that I used to be. Like, I'm out in California, we're at a fundraiser, we're having a nice time. I happen to mention that Kamala Harris is the best looking attorney general in the country. As you might imagine, I got trouble when I got back home. Who knew Eric Holder was so sensitive? Some of my former advisors have switched over to the dark side. For example, David Axelrod now works for MSNBC, which is a nice change of pace since MSNBC used to work for David Axelrod. The History Channel is not here. I guess they were embarrassed about the whole Obama is a devil thing. Of course, that never kept Fox News from showing up. They actually thought the comparison was not fair. to Satan. But the problem is that the media landscape is changing so rapidly. You can't keep up with it. I mean, I remember when BuzzFeed was just something I did in college around 2 a.m. Recently, I had dinner. It's been well publicized. I had dinner with a number of the Republican senators. And I'll admit, it wasn't easy. I proposed a toast. It died in committee. In fact, I'm taking my charm offensive on the road. A Texas barbecue with Ted Cruz. Kentucky bluegrass concert with Rand Paul. And a book burning with Michelle Bachmann. I'm also hard at work on plans for the Obama Library, and some have suggested that we put it in my birthplace, but I'd rather keep it in the United States.
My God. That's hilarious. Okay, so speaking...
I'm BuzzFeeding.
Speaking of BuzzFeeding. So thanks for listening, guys. We're going to have one more show next week. Make sure you come back at 5 p.m. on Wednesdays here at The Devil's Advocate on KTXT The Raider 88.1.